Welcome everybody to the Aris Meyer podcast. How you doing today? I hope things are going well for you as you listen to this. It is one of my heroes' birthdays, Mr. Tupac Shakur. So happy birthday, Tupac. This week I have a very special individual, a person that I met a few years ago through one of my mutual best friends, Mr. Leandre Pierre. I have had the pleasure of hanging out with him in person, watching him create and seeing some of his work. And I think that he's really cool, and I'm excited to share him with the world. Mr. Chris Allen, how you doing, Chris?
Good. Aris, how are you?
I am well, man. I'm happy to be here. Happy to talk to you.
I'm happy to be here too. I have to catch up, but I've heard a good number of your podcasts, and I really enjoy the way you interview and just present, and the way it seems to be a relaxing, you know, non-toxic, enjoyable vibe. So I appreciate that. Happy to be here.
Absolutely. All right. What I didn't tell you, I guess, is this episode's all toxic. It's all tea. So,
Okay.
All right.
Well, let me get my pinky ready then, brother.
All right. So, just as a quick introduction, the way that I met you is actually through our good friend Leandre. And Leandre is somebody that I've known for a while, and I know that he's a writer, and through him I've met all kinds of people in entertainment, and he would tell me about you. And I think the first time I ever met you was he was working on his show, right? And you were on it, I think.
Mm-hmm. And another guy's named Philip, maybe.
Yeah, I think it was that one. And he was telling me about you, and he was like, "Yeah, this is my friend Chris, and we went to high school together." And I thought that was really crazy, because I kind of met Leandre out of nowhere, kind of like through church stuff and whatever. Mm-hmm. So to meet him and then meet people like from his life was super interesting to me. And tell me a little bit about Leandre, how you guys met, your friendship. I'm curious.
Well, I want to say, for people who have listened to your podcast, they got to ask themselves, who is this Leandre person? How does he know everybody? And how do I meet this Leandre? It's so funny. That's what I would be thinking if I was a listener. It's like, man, this is Leandre dude. It's connected. So I met him in high school. Okay, so I'll give you what he and I can laugh about now. It wasn't very funny then. One story was, I guess we probably bonded when we both were pledging for the same fraternity in high school.
In high school.
For people who don't know, in the South, and maybe other places, but for sure in the South, there are fraternities and sororities in high school.
What? I've never heard of that.
And no, it's wild. And they treat it just as if it were a college frat and or sorority. So it's an interesting road that we won't go down, but so far. But yeah, man, it was wild. It's whatever the judgment is of us talking about that right now, that was the experience. That's what it was. But Leandre and I met there. We bonded there. We were two kind of sore thumbs, I guess, in our like fraternity or the one that we were trying to pledge, etc. So I think we were like the underdogs or whatever, the ones that people didn't like. So we kind of were like, hey, we have that in common. And I think that's pretty much how it started.
Hmm. So did you also grow up in Nashville?
I did. I would be interested to hear Leandre's version of the story. He'd be like, what, man, we met, you know.
He has a really good memory, man. He remembers details really well.
I know. So I'm like, I know he's going to be like, man, that is so off. But I grew up in Nashville for the most part. I spent a little bit of time in Memphis, then Atlanta, then back to Memphis, back to Atlanta again, but mostly in Nashville. And then my senior year of high school, I moved to Baltimore, Maryland. But so I was raised in the South, basically.
Wow. You really grew up all over. Was your dad, did he do something that warranted that much moving, or why were you moving around so much?
Yeah, he left. That's pretty
well.
Good. Yeah. No, people normally say, were your parents in the military? No, after my mom and dad got divorced when I was younger, I think my mom was basically just trying to do the best she could to survive and to raise me, a young Black male, on her own. So between friends and family, we kind of did a little round robin there.
Hmm. Do you feel like it made you a more interesting person to kind of like live in so many different places and kind of see how people did different things, or did you get the more like the new kid treatment?
Both. I used to ask myself, I wonder what it would be like to grow up in the same city, on the same block, you know, with the same friends. And I'm sure that's amazing. And there are elements of that that I wish, you know, I had, or, you know, would appreciate. I don't have any regrets. But what I wouldn't trade is just the ability to have to be in a different situation, different surrounding, and adapt and overcome. And so now I'm the way I handle things, as you probably know now, I don't let a lot stress me out. My thing is, if it's not life or death, like, we're going to be okay. And I just like to kind of handle things calmly. If everybody or everything around me is freaking out or heightened, thankfully my default is to just say, okay, all right.
Wow.
Something going on here, because I don't want to add to the stress or the craziness of the situation, because then I would just, you know, be lost in that. Yeah. So thankfully, I think, like, moving around and just have to kind of deal with life and being the new kid and all that kind of just, for me, you know, came out this way and had the effect that it did.
Man, it's crazy to think how many places you lived. And I wonder, like, those years are so formative. Do you feel like, do you feel like Tennessee Chris was different than Baltimore Chris?
That's a good question. You know, I don't think so. I think for me, because, you know, when I moved to Baltimore, I would get questions like, you know, oh, do you guys wear shoes in the South?
Come on, man, for real?
Accent? Do you have running water and da-da-da-da? I mean, and these are not foreign questions to me. Like, at that point, people don't ask that anymore. But back then, people would ask that question, to where I got used to answering, like, yes, man, we have shoes, we have socks, we got cars, we got rid of the horse and buggies like 2 weeks ago.
Come on.
But yeah, anyway, so, yeah.
Wow, that's interesting. So you graduated high school, and when you were in high school, were you interested in acting or the arts?
No, I just realized I didn't really finish your last question. So I think I was the same, Chris. And then at the same time, people did appreciate that I was from the South, and I kind of was more the, you know, loud, fun, silly, immature type of guy. So typically that was accepted in most places. Hmm. But, you know, there were some differences, but for the most part, I was still me. Okay, now what's the next question?
The question was, in high school, were you into the arts? Were you acting then, music, art, painting, and anything like that?
The crazy part about it is I did fall into going to an arts high school, like an arts magnet, Nashville School of the Arts. It was the first year that the school was founded or opened up or whatever. But at that time in Nashville, they would, when you were in middle school, before you got to high school, they would mail out these mailers, little flyers, basically. And they say, if you want to go to this school, check here. And it's kind of like a lottery, I guess you could say, for magnet schools. So I just, I end up, you know, probably checking the box for Nashville School of the Arts, and that's how I landed there. But to be honest, I wanted to be an actor or an athlete or, you know, whatever, just like anybody else. It wasn't like an uber passion. I didn't grow up watching a lot of TV or movies or wanting to be an actor or a thespian. None of that. You know, I was, you know, watching Transformers and, you know, Smurfs and
yeah,
Saved by the Bell and Will Smith and not Fresh Prince. And it was just, you know, people I saw on TV.
Interesting. So you didn't do like any plays or anything? You didn't really?
I think I did one play in high school at the Nashville School of the Arts, which Leandro should remember. It was called Cooley High. I probably didn't know any of my lines. You know, it was just a hot, complete mess, I'm sure. But I think that was like maybe in 11th grade.
Was Leandre in that play?
He might have been. I feel like he was in that play.
Oh, my God. Please tell me you have pictures.
I don't have any of that. I wish I did. But I think he was in that play with Mr. Lee, one of our you got to have DeAndre back so we can just talk about just talk about the Nashville experience, bro.
Yeah, I will.
Had Mr. Lee. Yeah, you have to. Mr. Lee was an acting teacher, and we just gave him a really hard time. I mean, I think we stressed the man out more so than anything else. But I did one play, and that was it.
Wow.
And yeah,
dude, when I was in middle school, we did an all white version of The Wiz. How crazy is that? We were like singing, you know, "Ease On Down the Road," and like, it's so cringe to like think back on and think that some art school teacher was like, you know what would be really interesting and cool, an all white version of The Wiz.
That is crazy. So basically, I did Wizard of Oz.
No, we did The Wiz. We did.
No,
it's crazy to think back, like the painting faces and like outfits and like,
yeah.
It's just a different world, man. It's just a different crazy time. But I remember really liking the music so much more than like The Wizard of Oz and stuff.
And yeah.
I remember I loved plays. I did a lot of acting in like high school. I did like, I was Gaston in Beauty and the Beast. Yeah. We did like Oklahoma, all kinds of stuff. And I just ate it up. I loved acting, man. Something about being on stage and everyone's just like, it's just you, you know, they're focused on you. Yes, I love that. But back to your story. Really
cool.
So you
I was just gonna say that's really cool. You know, I there is a huge difference between live performance theater and TV and film. But for that reason, you're on stage, real people are there, there's no cut, there's no take two, there's just no lunch breaks unless you count intermission, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful thing. The small amount of training, I guess you can say, I had was theater based. So I feel like that's my acting home, so to speak. And it's nothing like it. I love it. I love it too. I love theater. I wish I don't see enough. You wouldn't believe I love it, but I do. I do love it.
Yeah. I mean, I could see you up there for sure. Do you think that one day if someone showed interest that you would do something on Broadway or, you know, some big plays or musicals?
Eris, let me tell you, I have few like entertainment goals, not, you know, milestones I want to reach or whatever, outside of just supporting myself and my family through the craft of acting. The only like actor thing I really want to do is an awesome Broadway show, like, and I'm good, you know what I mean?
Yes.
So that would be a dream.
I would love that, man. I would definitely fly out to see you on Broadway for sure.
Thank you, bro. You got tickets. Front row.
Don't make promises. I'll be there. Me and Leandre will be there.
I know.
Front row, man. All right. So after high school, you joined the military, right?
I did. I graduated high school in Baltimore, Maryland. Went to Morgan State University, which is the HBCU in Maryland, for 1 year. And at the end of that year, or during that year, one of my good buddies, our crew, he up and left and went to the Air Force. Like, no, we didn't like go out and have conversations. Yeah, I'm thinking about this. I talked to a recruiter. None of that. He was just like gone one day. He's like, hey, I'm leaving. This is where I'm going. I'm like, what? So I get to my end of my first year of college, and I just wasn't focused on school. I was going back and forth to New York at the time, doing a little modeling or this or that. And I just stopped going to school. So I basically end up moving back to Florida where my mom lived at the time. That wasn't working out because I was trying to, you know, go be a 19, 20 year old or whatever in South Florida, where Miami and Fort Lauderdale, et cetera, is.
You ain't doing nothing. You're just partying, I would imagine.
Exactly. And so my mom was like, nah, because I was driving her car going back to her house. So she was like, you're not gonna be going to South Beach all hours of the night every weekend in my car. And but that's what I did. So it got a little crazy at home. I called my boy Terrence. I said, hey man, how you like the Air Force? He said, I love it. Come join, you know, if you decide to go the military route. And it was so crazy at home. I was like, all right, cool. I went to the recruiter's office myself. I said, hey, I'm signing up. I'm going to the Air Force. And that's how that started, man.
Wow. And what did you do there? What was your job?
I ended up being an air traffic controller. But I do want to issue a disclaimer. If anybody is listening and is toeing the line, trying to figure out what they want to do, and you happen to be a minor or at your mama's house, give them a heads up. You know what I mean? Talk to them, let them know what you're thinking. And also research each branch, figure out what jobs they have available, what jobs they're offering now. Make an informed decision like you would college or a job or anything else. Just don't up and sign up like I did. I mean, that's just crazy. That's silly.
That's good advice, man. My buddy Chris that I had on a few weeks back, he joined the Army that way. They sent a promotional hat, and he was like, "That's cool." And he's like, "If you sign up, you get this hat."
80% of people that way. They probably get majority of the recruits that way. Oh, I guess I'll go. You know.
Yeah, it's wild, dude.
Crazy. Yeah.
For a hat. All right, so you're in the Air Force, and you're out there controlling the air, and What made you want to leave the Air Force? What happened?
There was a civilian in the air traffic control tower where I worked in Panama City, Florida. His wife was involved in community theater, and she needed some volunteers. The play was Damn Yankees, which is a musical, and they needed guys to be the ensemble, part of the ensemble, people, you know, running around in baseball uniforms, singing and lifting up, you know, the girls who are singing and dancing, etc. It's a classic of like American musical. If you know theater, you either heard of it or was a part of it in school. But so I said, sure, I'll do it. I volunteered. I did that play. I think I had time enough to do one more play called Damn Yankees at another community theater in town. I'm sorry. One Flew of the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh, yeah.
So I performed there, played a character named Chief Bromden in that play on stage. And I was like, man, I'm really digging this. Like, I like this. And it was time for me to get out of the military. So I said to myself, I could either get out of the Air Force, still do air traffic controlling at a regular airport, you know, LAX type of situation or whatever. Or I could go to LA, pursue acting, whatever I chose. I just didn't want to look back 20 years, you know, for 20 years to pass by for me to look back and be like, dang, I wish I would have tried something, you know, I wish I would have tried something just to have fun or to live or to dream or whatever. So I chose to move to LA, man. And that was it.
Wow. Do you feel like there was a movie or an actor or something that really inspired you to want to be in theater or to pursue this dream? Or do you feel like it was just kind of just doing it made you feel like, man, this is for me?
I think just doing it. Since I don't have a large history of classic Americana film, you know, I can't name to you maybe but a handful of full of movies, and the ones I really liked were, you know, what, Coming to America, Home Alone, you know, the things that I was able to see. And my mom was I grew up very sheltered as much as she could in terms of like what I saw. Like, I still was a typical teen sneaking out and doing stuff like that. I didn't get too crazy, but because she was like, you can't listen to this music, you can't watch this music, this show, you can't play these video games, I think that's initially why I was so, you know, limited. And as I grew up, I just didn't spend a lot of time like researching TV or film or movies or watching, for that matter.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. So you were kind of just doing your own thing then. You weren't out getting crazy. You were at home.
Yeah. What do you mean?
I feel like at that age, you're listening to music and you're watching movies and you're just like kind of creating your image based on popular culture.
Yeah. No, man. It was just, to be honest, at that age, you know, my mom and my dad have probably been divorced for, I don't know how many years, a few at least. So I think as a teenager, preteen, whatever, to have your family split, or even to have it had split years prior, but still not have that structure or male influence, or, you know, just how the home, I believe, you know, is intended to be, where two parental units are there nurturing another human, right? A little one. That didn't happen. So I think just between me, you know, trying to figure out what life was about, you know, being angry about my dad not being there, and then with my mom doing the best she could to just keep me, you know, alive and safe and out of trouble, I think I just end up making it by, bro, to be honest. And, you know, the joy that I had did come from whatever things I may watch or just hanging out with friends. But it was a very, like, just trying to make it through existence as a young man, I think, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's really bold to just pick up and move to LA, man, like to just do some plays and say, this is what I'm going to do. I'm moving across the country and I'm going to do this thing like that. That takes heart, man. Did you have any kind of leads or anything when you decided to do that? Were you just like, I'm just going?
No. You know, in one sense, it does take heart. But in another sense, I think, you know, just me being, you know, crazy enough to not necessarily fully flush out the idea to go, I was like, you know, sure, let's just go. But no, like I felt like it was the right thing to do. I felt strongly about, you know, my attempts to come out here, but no, I didn't have any leads, didn't know anybody out here, you know, hadn't been auditioning and sending in tapes across the country, anything like that. I was like, I'm just going to go. So I packed up my Toyota Yaris back then, drove all the way to Texas. I think I slept like 6 hours, not enough. And then kept going until I landed in, I guess at that time, Moreno Valley, the Inland Empire. Yeah.
So what did you do? Did you just like find an apartment and start a like a random job, or how did you, you know, get going?
So one of my friends, basically an ex of mine, knew I was moving to Los Angeles, and she was getting out of the Air Force at the same time. So she was like, okay, well, a little bit before me, actually, I'll move ahead of you, and by the time you get out, you can come over. You know, things be set up. And that's how the initial arrival happened. A few months later, you know, me just being, again, young, typical, arrogant, like thinking about myself person, not willingly, but just being very selfish and just not aware of the other people around me. That relationship ended and I eventually moved a little bit closer to LA. And I think at that time it was like the Woodland Hills area. And I lived in this house. So I found this place online. It was like $500 a month.
Uh-oh.
You know, no credit check. You know what I mean? Cash only. Pay month-to-month type situation. So I'm like, hey.
Was this a trap house, man?
I was like, this sounds amazing. So I show up, man. And pretty much what it was it's your average, you know, 3-4-bedroom house. But they had put as many bunk beds as they could fit.
Like Fight Club, bro.
Every room. What? So it was $500 like a bunk, bro.
Oh my God.
It was crazy. And I guess they owned another house down the street where they were doing the same thing. And so the house I was in at least didn't have any bunk beds in the living room. But the house down the street, it was just straight bunk beds, bro. Hey, but they were making they're probably still doing it. You know what
That's
I mean?
That's crazy.
And it was people from like, just went to college, like going to CSUN, like the 18, 19 year old age up to like one or two senior citizens, man. It was interesting.
Senior citizens were living there in the bunk beds?
Yeah, there was one old dude in particular, you know, I guess he had his 500 every month. So that's all he needed.
Damn. I mean, yeah, living is nice, I guess, but.
He used to eat, man. He used to come in the kitchen, crack open like a can of beans or whatever and just, you know, take it to the head, bro. It was crazy.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. All right. So you're living in the crazy bunk bed house. Mm-hmm. When did you get your first audition? How did that happen?
My first audition. Wow. That's a good story. Well, you know, in LA, there's a couple of other cities as well. There's a few main websites where you can just like a dating app. I've never been on a dating app, but I assume it's like any other website. You load your pictures, you pay your money per month, you set up your profile, and anybody listening, you, Eris, right now, can go to LA Casting, or I think it's Actors Access, both of those, set up a profile and start submitting yourself for auditions that fit your profile, or even auditions that don't. You submit yourself for those. Mm-hmm. So anybody can do that. Now, when it comes to TV and film, SAG TV and film stuff that you'll see on TV at the movies, then you typically need an agent or a manager to access those. So my first audition, I'm sure, was just me self-submitting for student film projects, specifically graduate films, not undergrad films, or certain things that I've found intriguing online. And, you know, you submit for the audition, if they say yes, you're accepted, then, you know, you go audition and try to get the role. So I'm pretty sure that's how I got my first one. It's probably a student film or a graduate film. And I just kind of kept self-submitting until I got to a point where I had enough information or enough, you know, footage on my reel to be able to mail out to or email out to agents and managers, et cetera.
Interesting. And when you were, while you were doing this, were you also working like a regular 9-to-5 just to make ends meet?
In the beginning, I think I was working at all kind of random places. I've worked at, you know, I was working at a gym doing custodial work, mopping the floors and stuff. I worked, I think I was a host at like Buca di Beppo. I did telemarketing for like a day or two. I worked at Universal Studios in the hot suits. I worked at like audio video installation stuff. I never, you know, nailed anything in my life, but I was helping putting up people's 80-inch screens and like Beverly Hills and Bel Air and all that. But the guys I worked with were cool to help me out. So that was kind of how that started. But I've done a lot of different jobs. I did end up fall into corporate jobs, like 9-to-5 salaried type positions, but that was later on. But I've been blessed to always hold a job as I act, et cetera, or try to act, you know?
Yeah. I think it's interesting working in the food and beverage industry in LA, because there's so many people that work at the jobs and they're like the 9s and 10s of wherever they live. And then you come to LA and you go to like, you know, some random restaurant and the girl serving you is just like drop dead gorgeous. And you're like, why are you here? And then they're always undoubtedly, you know, on the road to being a singer or an actor or something. Mm-hmm. And they're just like, it's crazy. It just blows my mind. Every time I see like a really, really pretty girl and she's like a waitress, I'm just like, okay, here's another one with a dream, man. It's, you know what I mean? And it's great. Like, I hope that they get the dream, but it's just, I really wonder like what, you know, waitresses look like in like Wyoming or something. I don't know. You know what I mean? I'm not used to it, bro. We're spoiled over here.
Yeah, that's so funny. Yeah, because you're born and raised in California, right?
Yes, sir. Southern California, my whole life. Wow. I mean, I did travel and stuff like my church missionary stuff, you know, after high school. Yeah. So I traveled around the country a bit, but yeah, mostly here in Northern California.
Yeah, but in terms of like where you grew up and what you're accustomed to, yeah.
It's just different, man. It's weird being from Southern California because it's so mixed. I mean, you know, every race, every culture, every religion is here. So you go, you know, 50 miles east and it's just like, well, this is different. And then you keep going east and you're like, this is, well, everyone looks the same. Like, it's weird. Yeah. It's like, it's like a culture shock kind of. I think that's why like a lot of people like me don't make sense on paper. Like a white guy that dresses Mexican, that listens to rap, that he's Chinese food. Like, we just, you know what I mean? We don't check the boxes because we're all just, we grew up.
Sounds like LA.
It is, man. So you're a veteran, you're working on acting, and then what do you feel like was your first big role that you got here in LA?
Probably my role on Jane the Virgin. Not probably, but for sure. Because everything I'd done prior would maybe be an episode or just a couple of lines that, you know, crossed over into a couple of episodes. But Jane the Virgin itself, I believe, was only supposed to be one or two episodes, and it turned into 3 seasons, I think.
Wow.
So that would have to be the biggest to date for sure. And it was a great experience, Eris. You know, it was, that's just kind of how God has moved in my life, man, covering me when I didn't realize he was covering me, and, you know, continuously revealing himself to me in different ways through this whole acting experience. It's been and is pretty wild. It's a beautiful thing. A roller coaster, if you will. But yeah. So what were we talking about initially before I got off on that?
No, I mean, Jane the Virgin, you said that was kind of your breakout role. How did you go from one or two episodes to so many seasons? Do you feel like it was they just really liked you and wanted to write you in or what?
Well, I had a conversation with one of the writers and he was like, yeah, you know, we saw you when you came in for the first episode and we were just kind of like, you know, there's something about this guy. We like this guy. And yeah, that was it.
That's crazy. I mean, it does speak to your character, though. Like, you're a very happy dude. You bring good vibes. I feel like that's the kind of person you want to work with, right? Especially if you're on set for 14-hour days, you want somebody that's going to keep you feeling good, feeling energized, and bringing like positivity.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, and I also, you know, I hit it off with Gina Rodriguez, who was number one on the call sheet. She's the lead of the show. Gina is amazing. She has a very close relationship with the showrunner, the creator of the show. Mm-hmm. And which I hadn't necessarily noticed before. They had a really cool working dynamic. And I think because I clicked with one or two of the people, you know, it just kind of bled over into whoever else was involved and, you know, keeping me there week to week. So it was just a great experience. And yeah, I think, you know, my mom was always big on just be yourself, just be yourself, just be yourself. One of those mom things. But in acting, listen, that's one of the best things you can do is just be yourself, because it doesn't matter if I went to Juilliard or I've never acted a day in my life. If the role is for Eris, I can never bring to life what Eris naturally brings. I can do a really good job of coming close. Hmm. But if you walk into a room and I walk into a room and the writer or director, whoever, is like, I'm looking for a vibe. I don't know. I know it when I see it. And that's you. Then you divide, and I got to celebrate that. So, you know, just being yourself, nobody can replicate that. And it's refreshing in Los Angeles because, like you said, everybody wants to be or do something.
Yeah.
And they think that they have to act like the next person to be or do that versus being themselves, the person that's going to have to, you know, be there when things go well and when things don't. You don't want to walk into something not being yourself. But because a lot of people don't do that here in LA, it's refreshing when someone is themselves. And I believe that is a large part of the reason why I've had success.
Yeah, I love that, man. And honestly, it feels true to me because through my job, I've got to work like on a lot of different commercials. I got to work on the Ellen Show twice and, you know, like a lot of different movie sets and different things. And you could feel the energy on a set shift when people are kind or when they just don't care. I mean, it's very palpable. So I feel like if I was there every day, I mean, I was only there a couple of days and I could tell like these people don't care. These people are disinterested, whatever. And if people are just positive and bringing like light and laughter, it must be fresh air on a set like that, you know?
Yeah. And I think, last thing on that, I know Gina Rodriguez herself was big on whoever's number one on the call sheet. That's like the lead of the show. There's a literal call sheet with information. You show up and get your schedule for the day, the week, whatever. The person with the number one by their name is the first on the call sheet or the lead of the show. And the lead of the show will often set the tone for the day on set. They'll be the one who will either speak to extras or they don't. They'll be the one who comes in and goes straight to work, sits in their chair, they're cordial if you happen to run into them, or they're the person that when they're headed to set, you see everybody on their walkie-talkie saying, oh, Eris is coming, Eris is coming. Mm-hmm. I learned that when they say that, that means don't look at Eris, don't talk to Eris, don't move, don't breathe around Eris, because if you do, it's going to be a problem. So it's just, it's wild, man. You see it all.
Yeah, that was my complete experience on Ellen, to be honest. Being backstage, they had me I was working for Dave & Buster's and they wanted us to build some games so that some of the guests on the show could play those games with her like in segments. So one was Kobe Bryant and one was Lin-Manuel Miranda. And when I got there, they had told me like, don't talk to Ellen. Don't look at Ellen. She'll talk to you if she wants to, but you know, and I'm thinking in my head, like, it can't be that bad. Like, It seems like, you know, I know she's famous and she probably gets bothered all the time, but like, you know, just be like reasonable. But I remember like when she walked in the room, that's what it felt like, where everyone was just kind of like, okay, look away. Don't talk to her. Don't say anything that's going to make her upset. And it was the feeling that you're talking about. And I feel like if she would have came in and smiled and like, you know, the whole place would have just been so like harmonious and happy.
Yeah.
Man, I can imagine the eggshells, dude, if the person in charge is not happy.
Yeah, for sure. And thankfully, again, taking it back to kind of my default when in situations like that, I'm just like, hey, I'm here. I'm good. Y'all good? Okay. Y'all may not be good, but we're good. And so I'm chilling. So, and I was in a scene with the person who was award-winning actress who kind of was doing that day, the whole like just being kind of rude and loud and disrespectful. great, brilliant actress, you know. But my scene was with her just for a few seconds, and her interaction with me was cordial as well. So it was respectful, but it was kind of just everything else was kind of strange and out there. But, you know, I was just like, hey, you know, I'm going to stand here. I'm going to do my job, and I'm going to go home, you know, and that's kind of how I treated it.
So one thing that I've gathered talking to you and being around you is that you're a person of faith. And I have two questions. One, where did that come from? And two, how do you walk the line in your job of being a person of faith, you know, obviously in Hollywood?
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I'm glad we're talking about this, because the first few episodes of your podcast I listened to was pretty much all about people being like, religion, no, not for me, no. Nah, I tried it, been there, done it, got hurt, no. Nah, what is the point? No. You know, so I was like, I can't wait to be on
sir.
And I totally get it, and I respect everybody's viewpoint, so it was cool. But yeah, so in the South, most people are, you know, raised going to the church. No matter what you believe, you know, what your daily life looks like, you're going to go to church. Mm-hmm. So mama's going to make you go. And that was my experience. You know, my grandparents were in the church. My mom were in the not like preachers or anything, but they went to church. So we were always going, whether I was in Nashville or Memphis with my grandparents. So every week I was in church, and that's how it was until I went to college. And I didn't have like a deep spiritual connection with God or whatever. I was just there because my mom made me go, and there were cute girls. So I was, and I was like, I love God. Like, it's cool. It's what we, you know, believe, quote unquote, but it's also not a bad place to hang out and kick it with your friends in the back.
Absolutely.
Should I continue? Or did you want to ask? You want me to?
No, please continue. I was just going to say, that's when I went to church, it was the same. I never went to church. And then when I started going, it was very cute girls, very cool people. And, but I loved that. I love the community just being there, you know, singing. Eating, you know, communal eating was great. There's a lot of beautiful things I think about faith traditions and about religion. Obviously a lot of the people on this podcast you were listening to are people that were born and raised in a, you know, extreme religion. So they have some different views, but I got love for anyone that's living their truth that feels like, you know, they want to put love and compassion and empathy into the world, that they, you know, they want to treat people well and with respect. Like, yeah, I'm down for that. And I think that's one of the things I appreciate about you, is that you're very loud and proud with who you are, but you also walk that walk. And I see you doing that work in person and, you know, on social media and stuff. So that's why I'm interested in how you walk that line.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. So, you know, after I went to, like I said, got out of high school, left my mom, basically, I just stopped going to church. I think I have family members in Baltimore who went to a church, and maybe pastored a church sometime. So I would go to church, but I was in college, you know, and living on campus. So if I did go, it was just because I happened to be there, but I pretty much stayed away from church. And once I went to the military, I don't think I even, you know, drove past the church for the 4 years I was there. But, you know, just growing up and going to church, the seeds of faith and Christ and that relationship were planted. I just wasn't doing anything to cultivate that. But oddly enough, Eris, when I made the decision to move to LA, something at the time I would say, man, I feel like something is saying, Chris, you need to at least drive by church, brothers. You know, stop in, say what's up, and then dip out, like step foot on the grass and then go, you know, you need to do something before you move to a city like Los Angeles, especially trying to pursue something like this. Mm-hmm. And it was crazy, because in the Air Force, I mainly was focused on, you know, doing my job, going home, riding my motorcycle, hanging out with the fellas. Like,
dude, what were you, Tom Cruise in Top Gun, bro? You're riding your motorcycle.
Man, I was stationed in Panama City, Florida. It's one of the spring break towns of the States, man.
Let's go.
So it was a beach town. So in Florida, of course, you have straight roads, you have beaches, where I was in Panama City. So hop on your bike, you know, summertime, people come out and you have a good time. But so once I made the decision, I probably had like a year left in the Air Force. And so I was like, okay, when I get to LA, eventually I would try to, you know, go back to church, and maybe I'll start going back to church here and be kind of used to going back by the time I get to LA. But that's what happened, man. So sure enough, I moved to LA once I left the Air Force, and it wasn't immediate, but I eventually started going to church at that crazy house, the $500, you know, a month house. Uh-huh. One of my friends there, she was like, "Hey, I think you'll like this church." Now, mind you, she was coming in high every weekend, and I was coming in hungover every weekend.
Still, sounds like a church I might like.
Yeah. Not from church, just from life.
Oh, okay.
You know, yeah, no, they were not smoking in church, but she was just, we were just still in that partying phase of life. You know, she wasn't like an avid church goer, and she was just really trying to bring me to Christ, or, you know, change me or anything like that. She was out partying too. She was just like, "Hey, I think you like this church." So eventually, Aris, I showed up and I said, "Okay," I got to a point where I said to God, "Okay, I was raised to believe that you're real, that you exist, and you love me and you care for me. If that's true, then I feel like I'm going to do my part. I'm going to start going to church. I'm going to show up. Mm-hmm. And if that's true, then I, you know, I trust that you'll reveal yourself to me." And that's pretty much, it was like a man-to-man conversation. And so I started going to church. And next thing you know, each week, I started identifying with things that I hear in the message. I felt like, you know, the message was for me and my season and what I was going through in life. And that was just so consistent to where I really couldn't deny that the guy was reaching out and being like, "Yeah, bro, I'm here. You know, like I told you I was." And that was the beginning of, you know, really my walk with Christ.
What church is that?
It was a church called In His Presence Church, which is in Woodland Hills. I don't go there anymore, but that was the name of the church. It was not too far from the crazy house that I used to live in, but I had a great experience there. And yeah, it was a beautiful thing.
That's cool, man. I really, honestly, like, I really appreciate anything that brings out the best in a person, you know? And yeah. I think there's definitely beauty in every faith tradition.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I see you on social media, and I watch a lot of your videos, you say things that are like positive, upbeat, inspirational, motivational. Like that's kind of your thing. And it's very obvious to me that you're being fed from somewhere. Like, mm-hmm. you know, your cup is full, and you just want to help fill up other cups, you know, like I can feel it. So
I didn't know I was going to cry in this podcast. Ace.
Oh, my brother, you don't have to.
I don't mind crying. I mean, hey, I'm an actor, so if it happens, and that's funny.
Well, don't fake cry, man. I know you can.
No, not a fake cry, real cry. But it's crazy. I was taking the scene study class when I first moved to LA, and I just couldn't really become emotional or like cry. Like I wasn't not trying to, but things just didn't affect me that way. Mm. My you know, sensory, my nerves, I was just kind of really still in that military, like, young guy, the world is mine, you know, XYZ type of mentality. But I wasn't at a place where I could just look at a Pampers commercial and say, "Oh, look at that mm-hmm. baby," and just start crying, or really sit with somebody and listen to them and see that they're hurting. So now I moved. It wasn't like that. But sure enough, as the class went on, I was crying at everything, bro. Wow. Cat could walk by the car. Oh, look at, I don't even like cats. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's not like always like that naturally for me when I go on set or whatever. It's not like I'm one of these actors that can just say, "Oh, action," and boom, I'm balling. It wasn't like that. It's just that I was able to kind of, you know, emote and be affected by what's going on. And it's wild. It was this before, like in the military, that's of course not a part of the everyday conversation, you know, mm-hmm. expressing yourself and discovering what that's like. I think, you know, just a young man kind of cut off to the world around him.
Do you feel like scripture or Jesus or your time at that church kind of reopened your heart and then helped you connect with those things?
I do. Man, let's see. Shortly after I started going back, you know, I spoke about my father earlier and just being a young man without a father being there, trying to figure out what life is about and being angry, of course, angry at him and the world. I end up calling him out of the blue. I got his number. And I called him and I said, "You know what? I just want to let you know that I forgive you for not being there, for not being the father, for not being around. You know, I'm starting my walk with Christ, and I just don't want to have any unforgiveness in my heart, that type of thing. And he was pretty much like, okay, all right, well, you know, we'll be talking soon. And of course, I didn't hear from him, for another few years. And when I did hear from him, it wasn't on his own accord. So, but, you know, things like that, man, definitely, of course, deepened my relationship with Christ. And just being in a place, Eris, where it wasn't like I was doing something because, you know, I was forced into it, or I wasn't feeling like I only had, you know, the last thing I have to hold on to is a relationship or a God or something. It was just like a beautiful, organic, you know, type of thing, you know?
Yeah.
And I really kind of rapport with Christ.
I feel like that's one of the beautiful things that, that spirituality or religion can offer people is, I feel like the most powerful force in the universe is forgiveness, more powerful than anything, more transformative than anything. And I feel like there's multiple ways to give and receive it. And just the fact that this thing inspired you to call your father and just put it out there. I mean, how can you put a price on something like that? You know, like I really feel like that's a transformative moment that was brought to you by somebody helping you get there, you know, whether or not it's, it's God or whatever you want to say. So when I hear stories like that, to me, though, that's the beautiful part about spirituality. You know what I mean? It helps us be more than what we think we are, or more than our limitations that are caused by our emotions or our past, or, you know. So I dig that, man. That's a beautiful moment, honestly, to just call in and open your heart like that. Cause I'm sure, like, how scary is it to be that vulnerable with that person, you know, that wasn't there for your whole life, the person that's supposed to love you and protect you. And, you know, I have that relationship with my mother where she was around my whole life, but she wasn't with me, you know, and I've had those connections with her and ultimately, like, forgive her as her child. That's it's so scary and like it just kind of rips your soul open, but it's also liberating, man, to just forgive. Like I really, really feel the power of forgiveness is like the most holy act, the most spiritual, the most, I don't know, the most beautiful act.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's important, you know, if you have forgiveness and you're unforgiveness, you know, when, you know, just anger or angst or stress, you know, all those things. We're just not built to live in that, you know. And if I'm holding or harboring something against you in my heart, you are probably not affected by that. Pardon me, I'm affected by that greatly. You may care, well, you may not, you know, you may not even know that I have this big problem with you. But if I hold on to that, man, that's gonna weigh me down, and it's gonna just not be a good thing.
Yeah. Do you feel like this is a little bit of a fast forward, but eventually you found your person and you had children, and how do you feel like, do you feel like beginning that relationship with your father helped you eventually become a better father?
Well, I feel like not having my father around, you know, affected me in ways that I don't want my kids to be affected. So him not being there just makes me enjoy and take advantage of the fact that I choose to be here and around and available for my son. So it's just a motivator, I think, in a positive way to remind me of the beauty of what I have and what I've been blessed with. So that's kind of my approach to it. And as far as the relationship with my father, you know, we don't really have a relationship. Man, it's a crazy story. So talk about a fast forward. He has long since remarried. He has like 7, 8, 9, 10 kids, you know, and I'm not being silly.
Yeah.
And some of them I've come to know and they're amazing. He had a lot of kids. And one day I get an email out of the blue from one of the sons saying, hey, you know, you don't know me. I'm your brother. You're my brother type situation. We're moving to, you know, California possibly soon. And, you know, they kind of said some other things. So I was like, wait, what? So the son somehow found out about me, or the family found out about me. Mm-hmm. He decided to reach out. And so because he reached out, I ended up having a conversation too with my father. So since all this has happened, every now and then, the siblings, one or two of them and I will interact or just check in with each other. But with my father, there's still no connection. We don't really talk, or, you know, he didn't do like a, oh, okay, you're back in my life, so let me try to, you know, be a dad now, or just even keep it cool. Nor have I really tried to establish anything with him. I think I opened the door for it, but he didn't necessarily, like I said, kind of reach back out often or show interest. So I'm not at the place yet where I'm like, oh, well, let me try to call dad or whatever, because the relationship was never really there. I'm just like, okay, it's cool. I respect what it is and we keep it moving. But yeah, it was crazy. Like, I saw that picture on Instagram. It was like a whole team, bro, of kids. again, some of who I met, and they're dope.
Yeah. It must be crazy for them. Like, you're my friend, and I'll watch I'll be watching sports and I'll see a commercial and I'm like, what the hell? And, you know, I'll see you on TV just randomly.
Yeah.
You know, that you did one commercial for like a truck. And I remember I was watching like the Lakers and I'm watching this commercial and there you are. And it's just like, it must be weird for them to just see, there's my brother on TV, you know, like it must be real.
Yeah. I haven't had many conversations with them about it, but I'm pretty sure that's true. I mean, just like, it's surreal for me to know that they exist, you know, just period. You know what I mean? And to see them on Instagram or whatever. It's wild. Yeah.
So I really got to know you when you started a podcast with two really, really cool people, one of which is one of my best friends, Leandre, and the other, Mr. Ricky Lark. Tell the people a little bit about Hollywood Hype and that podcast.
Man, Hollywood Hype. That was our pod baby. It was cool, man. We had a good time with three brothers coming together to discuss all things Hollywood, what was going on in our lives in the industry, and just some of the entertainment news and things that we thought were interesting. But that was what the show was about. And I think it was a good thing. And there's no reason why it couldn't have still kept going. But just between, you know, schedule and people's lives growing, we just decided not to keep it going. But that was Hollywood Hype, man. And we had a blast. We would have interviews. We would interview people just like you're doing, have a great conversation. And so, yeah, that was it, man. It was great. I miss it.
Yeah, it was. I really enjoyed listening to it. I didn't really know. I knew you and Ricky like from like brief conversations, but I thought it was really cool, like the dynamic of you three. And that's kind of, listening to that every week made me feel like I knew you better. So when I would see you at like a birthday party or something, it was just like, oh yeah, man, I know Chris. Like, you know, I listen to the podcast. That's my friend.
Yeah.
And that's why
Ellen said, don't talk to me. We don't know you. We're not friends. I don't know you. Okay. I am Ellen. That is it.
You know, I tried to tell her a joke. So we built this big crane game where you win like prizes for Lin-Manuel Miranda. And we had it all built together and it was in the back of the soundstage. And, you know, we were testing it, winning prizes. And she walks up and she had her whole entourage. And I was happened to be the one standing in front of it. And I had my work shirt on. It's got, you know, two pockets. It's like a mechanic shirt. And she walked up to me in a very serious face. And she was like, so what's the easiest way for me to win a prize? And I was like, put a dollar in my pocket. Just trying to, you know, be funny. Just a little levity. Dude, she looked at me like I just farted in her face. Like she just turned around and walked away. And her assistant was like, you can't do that. He doesn't like jokes. It was crazy. It was like, yeah. Anyway, I don't know why I shared that, but I don't play with her. She's for real. But yeah, so man. Another memory I have from Hollywood Hype or after Hollywood Hype is actually one of my favorite memories. Our friends Ricky and Leandre wrote screenplays, like the first act of a show. And I remember they rented like a soundstage and we all got to do readings together. And that's where I met like a bunch of people and they both let me read on their scripts. And that was really cool. Yeah, you were there. And a lot of people, shout out David Ashley was there. He's become somebody that I really like. I had him on the podcast.
I heard it.
Yeah, that's my dog. But that was like such a great day, man. And I felt like one of the boys, you know, like up on stage and you're up there and you're like a real actor and they're all like real actors. And that was a really cool experience. So that's something I think back of when I think of you guys is that experience, man. That was really fun.
Yeah, that was cool. You did a great job too. Yeah, man. It was good. It was a good time.
Yeah. You know, I was a little typecast as the white racist guy in both of them, but you know, it's okay.
You know, the world takes all kinds, Eris. You know what I mean? The world takes all kinds.
But they wanted me to be something different, I guess. I had to test my acting ability.
Yeah. That was great.
That was fun. So I feel like from that moment on, every time I've seen you, it's been really cool. Like I've seen you at birthday parties or whatever, and we get on. There's little things I see. Like, for example, I'll read you something and you'll know exactly where this is from. I saw this one day when I was not having a great day. And I saw this. It said, humility, appreciation, dedication, hard work, perseverance, faith. Do you know what that is?
Yeah, I do.
So I was on Instagram and I was just having a bad day. And I saw you posted that. It was a picture that you had in, like, I guess it's your work desk or something like that.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's little seeds like that, man, that are inspiring, little things like that. Cause you know, you go on Instagram and you see a million butts, which I appreciate, beautiful ladies and you know, whatever. But they're amazing. God bless them. But I don't know, like,
please, God bless us all. Help
us. It's a blessing to me. But I appreciate seeing positivity, you know, and seeing like motivational stuff. And that's something I just wanted to bring that up because that's a memory I had of you that you don't even know about. A seed that you know, something you put out there that was meaningful to me. So I appreciate that you do that kind of stuff. Like, you don't have to take the time to do that. You know, you're out there acting, and I know a lot of actors don't want to put their personal, like, opinions or feelings out because they want to be, you know, as mysterious as possible so that they can get roles and kind of chameleon depending on who they're around. So I appreciate that you're yourself, man.
Thank you, man. And that what that was, I was in my office and the walls were bare. And I was like, man, I need some artwork in here. I was like, I don't really know how to draw. I don't really, you know, I don't have, like, painting stashed in my basement, you know, for this perfect occasion for this. Mm-hmm. So I was like, man, I got some a legal pad, and I have a marker, and let me just write, you know, something that would motivate me when I walk in the room. And that was it. So thank you for saying that. That's a blessing for sure.
Yeah, totally. All right. So before we move on to the lightning round, I have one last question for you.
Yeah.
On your IMDb, it says that you worked on Insecure. Is that true?
That is false, bro.
Your official IMDb.
It is. I've told one of the post supervisor on that show. I ended up meeting him through a different story, but I told him I have that credit. I wasn't on the show. I tweeted Issa Rae. I was like, hey, love to be on the show. Have not been on the show, but thanks for the IMDb credit anyway. It was not me. It's still on there.
Because I saw it and I was like, I texted Leandre immediately. I was like, wait a minute. Tell me your best friend wasn't on your favorite show and you never told me. And he's like, no, I don't think he was. He would have told me. So it was I was like, what? I had no idea.
But I did have an audition. I finally got an audition. I've only had one, and it was this last season for one of the characters on the show. And my wife has watched all of them. I watched most of them and enjoy the show. So I'll be interested to see the role in action this last season when I see it. But yeah, I was like, ooh, it would be nice to get this. It was a cool role too. So shout out to the actor, whoever got it. But yeah, it's funny.
Yeah, man. All right. So we're going to get into the lightning round now. I got a couple of questions for you. And you go ahead and break it down and tell me what you think. First one, I'll give you an easy one. If you could replace any actor in any famous role with yourself and play that role, what movie and who would it be?
Wow, that's a good question.
What's the lightning round, dude? You know,
it's a lightning round. You know what? You know what? As silly as it sounds, I'm gonna go with, because it's the first thing that came to my mind. The first thing that came to my mind was 300, just to be like, this is Spartan, just to be able to say
that. Let's go.
You know what I mean? That's the first thing that came to mind, because I just like period pieces, man. I like costumes, lights, sound, smells, the whole vibe, man. And so anything period, but it could also be like classical, you know, with horse and buggies and bonnets and everything else. If it's a period piece,
you'll get me
through the door for sure.
I would love to see you in like Troy or like Gladiator, one of those movies. That would be crazy.
Eris, bro. I played almost every cop, rookie cop, young doctor, young detective. It's always that.
Yeah.
As soon as I could play somebody bad or just somebody who's not necessarily on the right side of the law, which I've done maybe once, literally, or twice. Uh-huh. But for the most part, just know Chris is having fun.
Oh, man. Leandre, get on that screenplay. Let's go. Let's go.
No, he's supposed to be working on something, man, but we'll see. We'll see if I get an opportunity to work in that film or not.
Me too. We'll see if we're after he listens to this, I guess he'll let us know. All right. So the next question is, what is your dream role?
Dream role. I'm going to go with, like I said earlier, I'm going to go with just an awesome, fun, enjoyable theatrical play or performance on Broadway with like a good run. You know what I mean? Not a crazy long, you know, it doesn't have to be like a year long, 2 year long run. Just a good number of shows where we're having fun. The audience is having fun and getting to play around on Broadway. That would be a dream role.
Yeah. I like that. If that happens and it's The Wiz, I got you. I'll okay. teach you the music, the dance moves. Okay. I'll be your personal coach. I'm a little rusty, but I remember, you know, most of it.
Yeah, come back.
All right. If you could star in a biopic of anyone, who would you want to be in a biopic?
I want to play Bob Marley, to be honest.
Let's go. I love that. Bob Marley is one of my favorite human beings of all time.
Yeah, I think it'd be great.
Man.
Great to do that.
How's your Jamaican?
Oh, I got to practice, and I'm not going to do it now. But you know what I mean? When I used to live in South Florida, it was much better because I had Jamaican friends. But yeah. It's been a long, long time since that. But it would be great. Listen, man, all I need to do is I'll go to Jamaica a month or three before the film, maybe uh-huh. six, a year. I don't care. Let's get crazy. And by the time we're ready to say action, hey, I'll have the accent.
Hey, if Snoop Dogg could become Snoop Lion, you could definitely do it, bro. I believe in you, man.
Thank you.
Oh, my God. All right. And here's the last question. If you could change anything about Hollywood and the film industry in general, what would you change?
I would change the perception of Hollywood in terms of what people will and will not see. You know, whether it's the issues with race and Hollywood not wanting to put out an Asian film or a black film because they think there's not an audience, AKA people won't pay to see it. Things like, which clearly now we know are not true. And this is 2020, what is this, 2021?
2021. Whatever it is.
And we're still having this conversation. So just, I think those type of assumptions where, you know, if you have a vision, artistic vision, and you can afford to get it made, you know, whether it's with the iPhone or with, you know, a $10 million budget, then first of all, put it out there, you know, see how people react. Don't judge an entire culture or race of people, you know, for a dollar.
Yeah. I think that's powerful, man. And I really feel like the sad part of that conversation is these things only happen when it benefits capitalism, you know, like even today I read that they're making Juneteenth an official holiday mm-hmm. and it's like, you won't pass laws to help people or to help change the situation, but you'll make something an official holiday so that you could sell merchandise and food and, you know, like whatever. Yeah. And I think that's the sad part of this country is it's all about money in the end, you know?
Yeah, that's true, man. You know what I mean? Got to get that Juneteenth sale, you know?
just wait. I bet you just give it a year. Like we're going to see stuff like that. And it's so disheartening.
Yeah, that's true. And I think, and that's the, honestly, Eris, things like that, man, like in terms of my faith conversation, you know, I just feel like at the center of Christianity, you know, it's a man who gave his life for me, who didn't judge, who didn't hate, who didn't, you know, not want to be around because of this or that. It's just all been about, you know, love, nurturing, caring, and, you know, having the things that I read in the Bible, you know, come true. And in terms of, yeah, well, this religion is that, and this religion is that, and some people believe in, you know, science and Big Bang and this. Well, you know, to have that conversation, nobody can say, scientifically speaking, you know, you won't find in the book how the earth was formed. Everybody has ideas or theories or very, very strong possibilities, but everybody essentially has faith in something. It may not be religion, but you have faith in whatever you choose to believe to be true. Mm-hmm. So my thing is, when it comes to religion, you know, you may have heard some people say, well, it's not about religion, it's about relationship. And I agree with that. It's about not just this book says this, so I do this, but it's really saying I'm available. Let's see what this life of Christ or whatever is like. And then I can make a decision based upon my own. But most people either are just saying, well, yeah, I agree with this or that because that makes more sense to me. Or they just kind of, you know, decide what they decide without necessarily having a certain, you know, like for me, like I said, if I would have went to church and didn't really feel like anything was different or God was speaking to me or whatever, I just would have been like, all right, cool. Like, back to the club we go. We live. Mm-hmm. We turned up. You know what I mean?
Yes,
but
sir.
That wasn't my experience. So my thing is, when it comes to that conversation, it's just encouraging people that, listen, you know, we're human beings first. We have much more in common than we don't. If we just sit down and talk to each other in love, and I can share how I believe, you know, that God is real and why that is in my life. And that's just what I stand on. And through that, that's why you see the post. That's why you see me say what I say. I could choose to be a jerk. I could choose to act like my 3 credits on IMDb, you know, mean something compared to people who've been out here working and grinding for 20 and 30 years. I could be that guy who says, okay, I got a role. I'm not going to, you know, work a full-time job because I can live off this check for 2 weeks. If I was single, maybe, but I got a wife. And I now have kids. When I first started, I just had my wife, but I had to do what I had to do to help support the family. And man, you know, God was just always there whenever I would, you know, want to discover or reach out, and it just became real and has been. But that's what motivates me to try to make, not always succeed, but make the right decisions and choices and just be a light to people.
That's what's up, man. I appreciate you so much, Chris. And I appreciate you coming on and just sharing your story and sharing your heart, you know, like just being who you are and being proud of your faith and your history and your work. And yeah, I love it, man. If people want to find you, where do they go? Where can they find the man?
They can go to Instagram at Team Chris Allen. I'm not necessarily that active on social, but if I'm doing something acting wise, more times than not, I'll post. But you can find me at Team Chris Allen. And that's pretty much it. You know what I mean? I don't really do a lot, but you can find me there.
All right, man. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Much love to you. And until next time, peace and love. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, sir. It's been great.